Services are just letting out here at Trinity Episcopal Church. Let's give it a minute till we have the place to ourselves. Sunday morning, and across the nation, people come together for a moment of solitude and quiet reflection. Things are no different here. Folks from all over the Swedesboro area gather here, maybe just to experience a sense of peacefulness. Kind of ironic, especially with everything that happened here. At one point, this was one of the least peaceful and most dangerous places in New Jersey. What? You're surprised? Why, because this is a church? Well, think again. See, back in the days of the Revolution, there was no peace to be found. Anywhere. Not even in a church. Nope. Not even in a church. And it wasn't for a lack of trying. Standing here now, Trinity Episcopal Church didn't start out looking like this, with its Georgian-style architecture and Palladian window. In fact, it didn't even start out as an Episcopal church. But then again, the town didn't start out its current name either. At first, this neck of the woods was known as Raccoon, for Raccoon Creek, which runs along the edges of town. But as European immigrants settled here, they changed the name. Shouldn't be too hard to figure out where most of the first settlers came from. Your first clue comes from the name of the town, Swedesboro. And it isn't a stretch to figure out that back in 1703, when it was founded right on the edges of King's Highway, it was originally a Swedish Lutheran church. And that it was little more than an elaborate log cabin just about 330 feet from right where I'm standing. In fact, one of the church's few luxuries was a silver communion chalice that they purchased in 1731. A steady stream of ministers from Sweden tended to the spiritual needs of their settlers. But there was one who really made his mark, Nicholas Colin. In fact, he was the one who built the church as we know it today. He's also the one who was an unwilling participant in the revolution, who was thrown in jail, and who came close to being killed on more than just a few occasions. But I'm getting ahead of myself. You see, it was a rough adjustment for the Reverend Nicholas Colin, who arrived in New Sweden, what we call Swedesboro, in 1770. For one thing, the heat just knocked him flat. Now listen, I love South Jersey just as much as the next guy, but even I have to admit there are days during the summer when, whew, it can get very steamy, but I'm used to it. So imagine how poor Nicholas coming from Sweden, where even in July it doesn't get much hotter than about 72 degrees. Yeah, a big adjustment. And the heat wasn't the only thing that bothered him. He wasn't exactly swept off his feet by the local ladies. His exact words, and I'm quoting here, "The general defect of women in America is that they lose their teeth before they're 20. Hey, he said it, not me. I like American women. I think they're fabulous. They don't like my Swedish accent, but that's another story altogether. Back to Nicholas. Despite the heat and the toothless lassies, he finally settled in and came to like it here. He tended to his congregation of Swedish settlers, preached his sermons, usually two on Sundays. In his free time, he taught himself about the unusual plants and bugs he found here in the New World and sent samples of the local flora and fauna back to Sweden. He also spent some time in Philly, where he struck up friendships with Franklin, Jefferson, and a few other 18th century movers and shakers. For a few years, things were going along pretty swimmingly. But when war hits, nobody can avoid its ugly consequences. Not soldiers, not citizens, not even Swedish ministers. By 1776, it was almost impossible to avoid taking sides. As the battle lines were drawn, he was shaken by what he saw. And I'm quoting, "Many concealed themselves in the woods or within their houses. Other people were forced to carry arms. Others offered opposition and refused to go. The people were afraid to visit the church because the authorities took the opportunity to get both horses and men. Towards Christmas time, they shot a young fellow who would not go to the front. He hurried up on his horse and away, the bullet which barely missed him." Nicholas Colin tried his best to stay neutral. He kept his sermons free of politics, and he tried to intervene where he could. And again, I'm quoting, "I remonstrated with them about their mad, unchristian behavior. We saw the roads full of naked, half-dead soldiers. Several thousand of them died from dysentery and army fever." But Reverend Colin would soon pay the price for trying to be neutral. A big price. On February 4th, 1777, he was arrested on charges of siding with the English. He had just 15 minutes to pack his belongings, and then, with muskets and bayonets pointed at him, he was hauled off to prison. And there, he would have stayed if it hadn't been for Dr. Bodo Otto, a local doctor, a prosecutor against the Stamp Act, ardent patriot, and the person who posted bail to get Reverend Colin out of the pokies. But his freedom came with some strings attached. The colonists demanded that Reverend Colin take an oath of allegiance to the new government, or pay the price. After a little negotiating back and forth, the Reverend came up with a compromise. But Reverend Colleen's troubles weren't over. In October 1777, the Hessians attacked Fort Mercer, we call it the Battle of Red Bank, which was just 10 English miles away from Trinity Church. Once the battle was over and the smoke from the muskets and cannons faded away, Nicholas joined others who went to the fort to inspect the damage. But again, he found himself in hot water. Here's a quote. "Some rascals accused me before the commander and made him believe I was a spy, especially as I was clever enough to make drawings of the fort. Whereupon he arrested me and threatened to hang me within 5 minutes in the high gallows to which two miserable fellows were just being led. The Reverend dodged impending death by pointing out to the commander what international law expects of civilized nations, and that he was entitled to prove his innocence. He was released. But, whew, talk about a close call. A little too close for comfort, if you ask me. You'd think that coming within a hair of being executed, Nicholas Colleen would hunker down and stay as hidden away as best he could. Well, that just wasn't his way. He still refused to take sides, but he didn't stop trying to care for and minister to people, whether they English, Hessian, or Americans. He didn't stop when the American General Mad Anthony Wayne, wouldn't you love to know how he got that name, showed up with 300 soldiers, hungry, tired, and many without boots, and took over Colleen's home. He didn't stop when one day later the English showed up at his house looking for General Wayne's contingent. This time, Nicholas managed to avoid arrest. He didn't even stop when hundreds of American soldiers moved into the church lock, stock, and barrel, which caused a few problems for Sunday services. They took up their quarters in the church and filled it with filth and vermin so that no divine service could be held. I therefore had to preach in a private house where the best opportunity was found. The war continued to take its toll. Members of his parish lost sons in battle. Their property was destroyed or stolen by soldiers. Even the home of his friend Dr. Bodo Otto was set on fire. The town changed hands so often, locals trying to keep up with which side was in power almost needed a scorecard. Tempers ran high and brothers turned against brothers as people took sides with the Americans or the king, or in many cases with no one. They just wanted to be left alone. And through it all, Nicholas Colleen tried his best to offer comfort where he could. Finally, the war ended. Life resumed some degree of normalcy, and Nicholas went to work on a project of renewal. He built a new church, this church, for his congregation. In 1783, he rounded up pledges from some of the congregation, and with commitments of about £1,200, in today's dollars, they'd come to about $111,000. Look closely and you'll see he was inspired by Christ Church in Philadelphia and some say even Independence Hall. As work continued, his vision began to take shape, and after years of disruption by war, in 1786 the congregation had a new home in which to worship. You'd think that after all he'd been through, Nicholas would want to kind of kick back, relax, even revel in preaching in this glorious church. Nicholas's work was not done. After work on the church was completed, he resigned and moved to the Swedish Lutheran Church in Philadelphia in hopes that eventually he'd be called back to Sweden. He returned to Swedesboro occasionally to help out with services, but the congregation was never able to get another Swedish minister. Times changed, and over the years, Anglican missionaries had made inroads, and at the same time, their numbers swelled as the number of Swedish settlers decreased. The churches struck up a deal, and in 1790, Trinity Swedish Lutheran Church became the Trinity Episcopal Church. Over the past couple of centuries, there have been a few changes. They added a tower in the mid-19th century, and in 1899, the church was finally lit by electricity. But the church's history is still present everywhere you look. Even that silver communion chalice, the one that the church purchased in 1731, is still used on special occasions. Amazing, isn't it? How hundreds of years can pass. Oh yeah, things do change, but other things continue. The church has evolved into a new denomination, but for the people who pray here, it is a place where they can nurture their spirit. It survived war, and it's still a place for peace. It stood the test of time, and for the people of Swedesboro, the work of Reverend Nicholas Colleen and dozens of other ministers have made this a living landmark. This project is made possible thanks to a grant from the Garden State Historic Preservation Trust Fund, administered by the New Jersey Historic Trust and the support of Gloucester County Department of Economic Development and the Gloucester County Board of Chosen Freeholders. Stay tuned for other podcasts that explore South Jersey's historic past.